But how many have lost the enthusiasm and purity of the Christianity of their youth? Their hearts were not strong enough to be secure themselves. Where can these witnesses of Christ be formed, these saints of our modern times who are called to take such risks? In their parishes, in the Catholic Action Movement, in retreats, in spiritual guidance, assuredly. Married Christians cannot remain isolated for the hard work of sanctity. They must find spiritual formation appropriate to their state of life. For my part, I believe that family groups must preoccupy themselves with being, above all, schools of sanctity where families return regularly to renew themselves in fraternal friendship, to draw the new strength from prayer and meditation, to assure themselves that they are not alone in fighting the hard battle. The first Christian communities who shared their material and spiritual goods inspired people to say, with envy, "See how they love one another." The spectacle of their charity was overwhelming. Why shouldn't family groups today exercise the same attraction for their contemporaries? For many reasons, our parishes today cannot realize a fraternal community, mainly because they are so large. It is infinitely easier to achieve, and much more on a human scale, for groups of about six or so families. Thus Christianity is reconstituted from the bottom up, the family in groups of families bound one to another in the bosom of the parish. Thus we see groups of families recognizing their parish responsibilities, collaborating eagerly with their clergy in the liturgical life, in apostolic action with non-believers. In parishes where there are no family groups, the efforts of the priest, lacking both support and collaboration, are often less effective. Sometimes, of course, it is the priest who fails family groups because he does not understand their aspirations. But when the efforts of the pastor and the faithful are joined, no hope is too great. The history of the church teaches us that more than once great spiritual impulses miscarried. They were rivers lost in the sands. It is important to identify and help these impulses. If they are not aided, family groups run the danger of not recognizing the impulse which arouses them, of misapprehending their mission, of being held back by indetermination. People should be careful of putting obstacles in the way of these groups under pretext of testing the spirit which created them. One ought not to imitate those parents who want to prove the priestly vocation of their son, and create a thousand difficulties, declaring that if his vocation is authentic, he will be able to resist all obstacles. How naive! How can they ignore the fact that many vocations fail because they were not taken seriously, protected and encouraged? A family group is a base of operations, a point of departure which should distrust the constant temptation to retreat into itself. The day that it becomes no more than a little ghetto, its mission will be betrayed, it will have lost its reason for existence. To avoid such a failure, should there be a federation of all family groups which would impose forms and methods elaborated a priori? God save us from that. Nothing would be more dangerous than such a militarization. Moreover, many groups are already attached to different organizations. This multiplicity is a safeguard. Nothing is more useful than competition. The triumph of charity. Family groups must make a constant effort to develop fraternal charity. Little by little, as families help each other and exercise fraternal love, their love comes nearer to winning the home, the neighborhood, and the country. It is important to build a church. Day and night the Eucharistic Christ will live there. It is no less necessary for Christianity to possess groups in which charity lives. It is another way of making Christ present to men. Where fraternal love is found, there is God, chants the Liturgy of Holy Thursday. When two or three are gathered together for my sake, promised Jesus Christ, there I am in the midst of them. The presence of Christ means the presence of the Church. Wherever Christians love each other, there is the Church, providing only that this little community wishes to offer itself to the service of the Church. When they are united, the Christian's power of intercession is an extraordinary power. If two of you shall agree on earth about anything at all for which they ask, it shall be done for them by my Father in heaven. For eternal love has an exceptional fertility. Round about it, evil draws back, the desert flowers. A pastor of the suburbs of Paris said to me, "When a street of my parish is morally unhealthy, I ask a Christian family to come to live there, to simply give witness of their fraternal love. At the end of 6 months, there is a new atmosphere among the inhabitants of the street." A fraternal community is God's most important message to men, the revelation of the intimate life of God, His life of the Trinity. There is no discourse on God which is more eloquent and persuasive than the spectacle of Christians who are one as the Father and the Son are one. Nothing glorifies God better than Christian unity. It is the great masterpiece of divine grace. God manifests His goodness there, finding in it a reflection of His Trinitarian life. The heavens sing of the glory of God, for eternal love sings of eternal love. May this be your goal, to make of your group a triumph of charity. United in My Name. On June 6, 1956, during a pilgrimage to Lourdes, I was talking with one of the group while walking toward the grotto. The speaker expressed his amazement at the rare quality of the relations established on the train in the first hour of conversation between the different members of his pilgrimage who were strangers to each other. He marveled at it, but he could not explain it. I suggested the following explanation. Human relations are of diverse types, depending on whether they are founded on relationship, camaraderie, friendship, sport. Each has its characteristic note, its own quality. There is another type of human relations, specifically Christian. What gives them an exceptional quality is the value of what is held in common, not only thoughts, tastes, and human emotions, but the spiritual life. These persons love Christ and have such wonderful trust that they openly disclose their love to one another and the joys, sorrows and aspirations engendered by it. And how impressive it is to perceive in other persons the echoes of grace, the thoughts and ideas of a soul in accord with grace. What is more, the promise of Christ is realized, "When two or three are gathered together for my sake, there I am in the midst of them." His mysterious presence betrays itself. The peace, joy, and light of the exchange can have no other explanation. Isn't this the quality of love which explains the influence of the first Christians on those around them? See how they love one another. Their radiance still touches us after 20 centuries. The ambition of the family movement is to establish this quality of human relations at the heart of each group and in each family. Common prayer, mutual aid and effort, exchange of views, are so many ways by which you are united on the spiritual level in the name of Christ. The temptation to remain on the plane of human friendship is often great and we must constantly react against it. Christian friendship is a difficult achievement. Days of recollection, discussion days, and other ways offered to couples to aid them in finding each other in Christ are a great help. Human respect, timidity, the heart's avarice, everyday life, and the demands of the flesh are all obstacles to a spiritual union. How many, even among the best, pass their whole life without having the experience of this intimacy in Christ? They have everything in common, except the most precious thing, their life with Christ. Only parents. One family said to me recently, "They don't believe in love anymore in the family groups. You no longer find couples there, only parents." Of course I did not take this comment too seriously. However, I asked myself if it did not contain a partial truth and I talked it over with one of the responsible members of the movement. Gently, and a bit cautiously, he replied to me, "You don't suppose that after 15 years of marriage and 7 children, we still act like turtle doves? But that doesn't keep us from understanding each other." I found little reassurance in his use of the verb understand where I had expected him to say love. Family groups are based upon a certain conception of love. More exactly, they rest on the profound conviction that conjugal love is a magnificent divine reality, the work of the sixth day crowning the pyramid of creatures, the most essential and fascinating symbol of the union of love which God wished to contract with each man, which both reveals and realizes this union. If you have arrived at the point where you simply understand one another, I ask you to reread the chapter on vocation of love. At least reread the first lines of the Charter of the Equipes Notre Dame. The families of the group wish that their love, sanctified by the sacramental marriage, be a praise of God and a witness to men, proving that Christ has saved love. Above all, don't lie to yourselves. If you do not have faith in conjugal love, don't call it wisdom or maturity. If your love is waning, don't excuse yourself under the pretext that there are so many more pressing, if not more important, things: the education of growing children, and multiple social responsibilities. Your children have an imperative need of the conjugal love which gave them birth, and it alone can sustain their growth. Whatever be your success or position, your human value is in danger if you discredit your love. And don't be too quick to pretend that at least your spiritual life gains by the loss of your human love. You don't construct one upon the ruins of the other. The very world around you is frustrated if your love grows cold. This world is not far from despairing of love, and of being absorbed in material things. It has a right to your living proof of the existence of love. It needs a glimpse of divine love shining through a human love to learn from you that Christ came to save love. Will you refuse to give this witness? I am aware that love, in evolving, changes its countenance. Nor do I ask you to love as you did at 20, but rather with the love that is each day truer and more profound. Never acquiesce to the decline of your love, never say your love is mature if it is sick unto death. Catholics, where are you? Are you Catholic? Is your family group Catholic? Don't be too quick to answer. It is not sufficient to be inscribed on the parish registers as being Catholic. You must be permeated by the Catholicity of the Church. Calling a man or a group Catholic is true to the extent that Catholicity of the Church exists in them. To help you answer my question, I will try to set forth the essential notes of this Catholicity. First of all, let us discard a false definition. It is not because it is propagated throughout the world that our Church is called Catholic. The Church, writes Father de Lubac, was already Catholic Pentecost morning, even though all its members were in one small room. To say that the Church is Catholic is to recognize God's will to bring humanity together in one body. It affirms that the spiritual richness of the Church suits all men without exception, that in it and in it alone they can and must find the fullness of their human and religious aspirations, forming one whole, yet not losing their personality or originality. Our Church is at once both marvelously one and diverse. Think of its various rites: Latin, Greek, Maronite, Coptic. Of the multiple spiritualities: Benedictine, Franciscan, Jesuit. How much more admirable this diversity and unity will be, how much more striking the Catholicity of the Church will appear on the day that the great Indian, Chinese, and Arab civilizations abandon what is decadent or erroneous and enter into the Church with their immense cultural and spiritual riches. With this definition in mind, we come back again to our question. A group is truly Catholic when it has a fraternal interest in all races and civilizations, in all the social settings in which the doctrine of Christ is unknown, when it impatiently desires their entrance into the Church and bends all its talents to this end, for love of them, but first of all for love of God, so that in the Church the sanctity of Christ will be resplendent in always more varied forms. By contrast, the group which excludes from its thought, love, and prayers this or that a milieu, race, or civilization no longer merits the title of Catholic, their Catholic spirit having been supplanted by the spirit of a sect. The two terms are opposite and contradictory.